which is
That's the report from the State Board Liaison, Steve Moore.
Mr. Moore.
Good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Board members. And I'm Steve Moore with the State Water Board, liaison for the Central Coast Regional Board, something I'm very proud and fortunate to have that distinction. And my first remark I wanted to make today on behalf of the State Water Board, especially Vice Chair Fran Spivey Weber and Board Member Tam Dodek, very personally congratulate Dr. Hunter and Vice Chair Jeffries on their reappointments. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have your service in our overall organization. We think you embody the vision of the water boards, and I thought it might be worth revisiting. What is that vision? The vision of the water boards is a sustainable California made possible by clean water and water availability for human uses and environmental resources of this state. That's our vision, and I think that you both, and as well as the other board members here in the Central Coast region, embody that vision. You know, as I mentioned last time I was here, I will organize my liaison reports roughly to start with budget, and then talk about some of the items that would be of interest to you that the State Board's work has recently worked on and then is currently working on, and then wrap up with some legislation overview, since it's sort of a report out of Sacramento to the Central Coast, and try to tailor it to issues of interest here. For instance, I won't go on and on about the Klamath River or the San Francisco Bay Delta, which is a lot of my work. But so a lot of you were at the Water Quality Coordinating Committee, the WQCC, where the State Water Board and the Regional Water Board members gather and discuss current events. And we were reminded that we're a fee-based agency now. Over 80% of our funding comes from fees, from permits that we issue. We're no longer directly relying on taxpayers through income tax, through the general fund, that actually support our programs through fees. So as we develop new requirements, we need to be mindful about our staffing resources and how we have to rely on the fee structure to support our programs. And since we're moving to a fee-based structure, and have been for the last 10 years, this is no news really to those who've worked for a long time in the system, but it increases the scrutiny on our agency. Not that it wasn't important before to be responsible, but the fee payers want to know what their fees are being used for and that they're being used efficiently. So the State Water Board has embarked, you know, as an outgrowth of the September 2011 fee increases, we committed to a resource alignment study, and we released a report in April of this year about our sources of funding and the expenditures at all the 9 regions and at the State Board on different programs. Programs, the TMDL program, the NPDES program, WDR program, 401 Water Quality Certification program, Irrigated Lands program, etc. So it was accepted by the State Water Board earlier this year, but as part of that effort, we're committed to a work plan to evaluate the costs of compliance with our requirements in the whole range of permit requirements, including, you know, reporting, monitoring, and other activities. We've engaged stakeholder groups. You know, we do our best. It's never a perfect system, but we've established groups around this issue to get input from the regulated community and other interested organizations as far as, you know, what are the costs of compliance? And we want to bring that back around to whenever we have to bring up in September the idea of whether we need to raise fees or not, that we're, let's say, armed and ready, you know, with detailed information to respond to concerns and to address questions as we consider fee increases to support our programs. So, well, part of that is we're in our fourth year where we've been doing performance reports, and I know as a former regional board person, you know, that it's a challenge to put these performance reports together, to set targets, spend the effort to do that on top of all the other work we're doing at the regions. So acknowledging the effort that's required, I just want to let you know that this effort has been very well received in Sacramento and beyond. As far as, and we mentioned Undersecretary Gordon Burns of Cal EPA, folks at that level are very positive about this effort that the regions have gone to, the state's gone to, Eric Oppenheimer's office within the state board, to really meet the goal number 5 of our strategic plan, which is to improve transparency and accountability. And I encourage you, it's a user-friendly interface, to go to our state board website and review our 4th annual performance report, which you can go to all the regions, all the programs, and look at the funding, look at expenditures, and look at the targets that we're setting, and sometimes meeting, sometimes not. That's okay. We want to make it clear to state board members, we don't expect all the targets to be met every year. A year goes by, things come up, new priorities come up. We can explain that, but in fact, if we always met our targets, I think people would get suspicious. Well, maybe you're not aiming high enough, that kind of thing. So this has just played well. I wanted to pass that along to regional board staff and the board members that, the California Environmental Dialogue wrote a letter to the governor commending the state board on this process. That they really feel other member agencies and Cal EPA should do something similar. And so, isn't that amazing? It's great for us to celebrate that success that we're thought highly of in terms of transparency and accountability. And so, just wanted to acknowledge it's a challenge to do that type of work, but it does pay off at Sacramento for what it's worth. I think, other state agencies around the country are looking at it too. And I'm really proud of our staff slogging through and putting together a good product, the performance reports. On some other issues related to our staff performance, we recently did what's called refunding, which is really basically refinancing the Clean Water State Revolving Fund for wastewater grant, wastewater loans, low interest loans for often small and disadvantaged communities. We can even come up with forgiveness, principal forgiveness, which is another word for grants. So this fund is really critical to moving forward with our clean water goals and vision. And we awarded staff a couple of days ago at the board meeting a certificate of appreciation and a small cash stipend, small, for doing this exercise of refunding the state revolving fund, which is like a refinancing with lower interest rates, working with the infrastructure bank and a sister agency. And we're very excited and proud about it because we've saved California $10 million by doing that. That's no small drop in the ocean there. And so we're happy, and we also, on top of that, have a AAA bond rating for this program. Not a lot of state programs have that kind of bond rating. So when we went public, they got snapped up like that. And that's a testament to the commitment and excellent work of the State Water Board staff in the SRF program. So I'd like to point that out to folks, that there's a lot of thoughtful work going on. And in the same vein, I used to work in the private sector. I've done an SRF application process myself for a wastewater agency. It's a difficult process. It's challenging. And I heard in September that the same staff are looking at that process and are revamping it to make it more efficient, updating it, bringing it into the 21st century. And also, this 2 days ago, we approved amendments to the operator registration program, the operator certification program for wastewater treatment plants. This was a long time coming. It was work that had been put together over the last decade, but as new ideas and important issues have come up with certifying wastewater treatment plant operators, the additions have been made and the program modernized. It also includes a contract operator registration program, which is helpful in small and disadvantaged communities where you might not be able to have someone locally work on a treatment plant, but you'd like to have the flexibility to contract those services out. So it's amazing but true, we didn't have that in place as far as being very clear about contract operators. So I wanted to let you know about that recent work. We've adopted the 2013 intended use plan for the SRF program, and the Prop 84 grants for stormwater. The list was adopted statewide, and as your liaison, I'm always looking to make sure Central Coast has fair representation in this. And you know, I'm really personally, as a state board member, very supportive of the low impact development innovations throughout the state. Central Coast is right up there at the forefront, and so one of the projects is the Ecology Action Santa Cruz project for Monterey Bay Low Impact Development Program as an example. And so as a new state board member, it was gratifying to see the list of Prop 84 grants, which was just all the way down low impact development projects, to demonstrate the efficacy of this necessary shift in public works development projects for this state if we're going to meet clean water goals. So we're walking the talk as far as what we're trying to fund through our Prop 84. And let's see, just real quickly, I'd like to highlight to you that the state board is relying on regional board staff in a lot of general permit actions, and want to encourage this region as well as other regions to work for the state board directly. And we did two projects, we finished one and we're working on one. In September, we adopted the general waste discharge requirements for aquifer storage and recovery projects that inject drinking water into groundwater. This is an important tool in the toolbox for water resources around the state, to be able to have reservoirs of groundwater, but to do it responsibly and sustainably. And Region 5, Central Valley Water Board, really was doing more of the cutting edge work in this area. And so they were already looking at that. And then that was where our executive director, Tom Hatward, who has a goal of having what he calls a stable of general permits that regional boards can use for different general categories of discharge. This was an example where he thought, hey, that's a good idea, but you don't have to do it just for the Central Valley. Let's look at it statewide. This is going to be a tool that staff can use throughout the state. So we adopted that in September. We're working on a general order for composting facilities. We were going to adopt it last month, but we're working with Cal Recycle, who's a sister agency in Cal EPA. We want to make sure it's crystal clear that we support composting as a important, more environmentally responsible way of managing solid waste, at the same time protecting water resources, particularly from sulfur nitrate migration that can happen in those sites. We don't want to over-regulate it, otherwise we'll create a disincentive. So we're working through the details. And in that case, we rely on staff from the San Diego region, Region 9, who have kind of, just through their own talent and vision, have forwarded the general order idea. And so the state board is really open to looking at how these can be applied statewide to be more efficient. So just wanted to give you a couple examples. I hope that has some small dose of inspiration. but we're really interested in integrating more as time goes on. And a couple of items, I know I'm going on and on, but just wanted to share Sacramento with you a little. We did deliver the Assembly Bill 2222 report, which is the communities that rely on contaminated groundwater. That's been sent to the legislature last month. We still are working through delivering the nitrate pilot projects report that we heard a lot about earlier, but Dr. Harter's report. That will be sent to legislature officially soon. In October, we adopted, and I mentioned we had this queued up before, we did adopt the model monitoring vessels and marine protected areas amendments to the ocean plan. in October. And that was a general order, but it got us up to date on some programs, especially with the vessels discharges. You know, the ocean plant was silent on vessels, and we had to at least get the current programs up. An example is ballast water from ships and cruise ships, and then, you know, sewage from cruise ships, that sort of thing, that different agencies conduct other than ourselves. And as you've heard about the desalination policies under development, we had a workshop in August where we heard from the three technical panels on desalination. And our plan is a public release of proposed amendments in early 2013 and to have a hearing on the proposed amendments to the ocean plan for desalination policy in the spring of 2013. So I think it's an issue of great interest to this region. We're on the sewer collection system general order. There were some draft amendments proposed last year. They've been reeled back a bit because the existing programs seems to be working, you know, getting sanitary sewer collection systems to be more mindful and proactive on managing to avoid spills. And so the scope of the update has been limited to the monitoring response plan. You know, this order was originally adopted in the year 2006. So we're getting at that point where we want to look at it again. With stakeholder input, we reeled back our scope to the monitoring response plan. And so we're looking at reissuing this under the executive director's signature in January. And we heard a bit about, Board Member Johnston talked about the challenge of moving from point source to non-point source. The statewide board's in the thick of that. We reissued the stormwater permit, general permit for Caltrans in September. We had a hearing on the general stormwater permit for industrial sites in October. We got an earful. And of course, but we're still working and making progress and trying to make these stormwater permits consistent. We're focusing on that issue I talked about earlier, the low-impact development implementation. We're focusing on TMDL implementation. You know, there's so much out there on non-point source. We really want to focus, what are we going to work on the next 5 to 10 years on this general permit? And so we made a concerted effort to try to focus all the parties' efforts throughout the state on these issues. Then there's a third stormwater permit, which is the Phase 2 MS4, and that's shorthand for the communities in the state that are less than 100,000 population, and some other facilities like universities that weren't covered under the other stormwater permits. You all are familiar with this. This is originally, I believe, was adopted in 2003, the original Phase 2 general permit, so that's being updated. We had a workshop earlier this year, and we received more than 100 comment letters on our order. We had hoped to adopt it this month, but we're trying to incorporate these comments, and so we're going to have a workshop now in January on this permit. I think it would be, I can't give you the exact date, but it'll be one of the January board meeting dates. And then we plan to adopt in February 2013. We're working on the trash policy statewide. That's going to be made public in January, I believe. And then, shifting quickly, I'll just highlight two legislative actions. We heard a little bit from the regional board members about the right to clean water. This was AB 685. And this relates very closely to the work this board is doing and the Central Valley Board is doing on nitrate contamination of groundwater. And just what the language of the bill requires all relevant state agencies, including the State Water Board, to consider this state policy while revising, adopting, and establishing policies, regulations, and grant criteria relevant to this policy, which is It has been declared by the governor to be the policy of the state that every human being has the right to safe, clean, affordable, and accessible water adequate for human consumption, cooking, and sanitary purposes. That's the policy of California. Megan Brown of our staff, for instance, works on the small disadvantaged communities policy development. You know, we're looking at how we update that to be consistent with this new policy of the state. I thought I'd mention, you know, we're talking about general orders, and, you know, there's some changes to the water code that were made about regional board members. And there's 7 instead of 9, and we talked about that before. But a recent Senate bill, 965, makes it easier for interested persons to communicate with members of the water boards by allowing ex parte communications with members of the water boards with respect to the adoption, modification, or rescission of waste discharge requirements, conditional waivers of waste discharge requirements, and conditions of water quality certification that apply generally to broad classes of dischargers. So what had to date, and this, it doesn't go into effect right until January 1st, so I can't talk about that phase 2 permit very much yet. But next month I can talk to you with more detail. And you know, the concept behind this is a general permit is not really, if we're real honest about it, it's more quasi-legislative than quasi-adjudicative. It's an action that affects a broad amount, you know, of discharges. It's not really an enforcement action per se. Or a permit action because it affects a broad class. So conceptually, the state water board members are very comfortable with having more discussion before a decision about general permits and that sort of thing. We have been mindful that that puts a new burden on regional board members who are volunteers, essentially, in terms of, you know, and I'm certainly inspired by your presentations today, you know, in terms of your commitment to participate and make yourself available to interested parties. But, you know, whereas state water board members are salaried members who have, in theory, time to meet with people and learn about the details of how they're affected, regional board members have to make a living other than being on the regional board. And so I really applaud what I consider to be extraordinary efforts that you're making to be available and to learn about these issues. But it's, you know, I think it's a different situation for you. And I, that's what I tell people is, you know, go easy on the regional board members. They're volunteers, having been one. And, you know, so the general orders are important to make, be accessible and that sort of thing. But, you know, remember, protect yourself, because there's a lot of time that could be spent on that. And then, yeah, so that's it for my report today. I want to thank you for the opportunity to report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Mr. Moore. Any questions? Dr. Hunter.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the range of issues that you brought to us today, and it is really helpful because there's a lot happening, and to hear directly from a state board member is also very important to know your perspective, and as our liaison, it does help us understand how we contribute to the work that's going on and where we fit in as far as the 9 regions. It's the first time I've heard have that perspective as well, so that's really important. Because we are a system, but we have our local priorities, which we want to focus on and can then offer to the state board. One question, big overarching question I have for you, and I would not expect you have an answer, but I wanted to bring it up. And that is how climate change is being addressed or considered in the general permits on wastewater discharge, because as I was looking through, we have several today that are on consent, and as I was thinking about the kinds of problems that we've seen with violations, typically they occur with large storm events where the systems are just overwhelmed. So this suggests to me that long-term infrastructure shifts And I know, you know, Santa Cruz, for example, is, to my mind, there may be others that I'm not as aware of, but Santa Cruz is one area where they are taking a serious look. They've actually got a staff person appointed to consider infrastructure changes and sea level rise, where they sit in terms of climate change that occurs with greater storm intensity, mm-hmm. and certainly Sandy is on our minds right now. Mm-hmm. I just am curious and would like to know, and maybe in a future report, you could help us understand where the State Water Board sees policy shifts going and how, in the long run, we are going to support these changes, important changes in infrastructure, mm-hmm. to accommodate larger storm systems that come through, especially on the coast.
Yeah. Well, the State Water Board clearly embraces the reality of climate change, and we do have staff in the Office of Planning, Research, and Performance. What is it?
It changes.
Office of Planning, Research, and Performance. Who and Vice Chair Spidey Weber participates in a joint task force with the Energy Commission and the Public Utilities Commission to look at energy and water in terms of climate change. Maybe a little more from the water resource side, because the snowpack we rely on as a reservoir is going to change, and so Department of Water Resources is working with us on these type of task forces planning ahead. Now, but your question was about how our programs are incorporating it. And, you know, I would say it's not explicit, but I'll acknowledge one of the challenges. You know, we're looking at, say, on low impact development, having a design storm, right? That, and I wish I could just tell you what that was off the top of my head, but it's an 85th percentile type measurement. You know, and when you look at hydrology, what's interesting about hydrology, and this is kind of a deep issue, is hydrologic planning assumes stationarity. That is, you can hindcast and look at their historical record, and then based on a percentile storm that you select as your design storm, it's based on history, okay? And then you go forward assuming you're going to protect, you know, on a 100-year event. But DWR, Department of Water Resources, will acknowledge they're struggling with this assumption of hydrologic stationarity in the face of climate change. Whether it's storm intensity, which is difficult to predict, that is one of the hypotheses, or something a little more easy to predict, like the snow reservoir that we rely on. So I would just acknowledge there is a fundamental challenge as far as, you know, what design standards we choose and how we incorporate climate change into that. But I think by staying on top of issues of infrastructure renewal, say through, you know, the general order on sanitary sewer overflows, staying engaged in these processes and having staff knowledgeable about what's planned and are these assumptions incorporating climate change in terms of their design is very important going forward. To the extent that our general orders, I think we acknowledge it, but we're not real specific, and I don't feel I can answer it much more than that at this point. But you know, I think culturally our water boards acknowledge climate change at the staff level, and we need to continue to ask those questions when big changes, big investments in local communities are contemplated. You know, whether it's rebuilding a treatment plant at a current site, does that make sense? You know, and that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. Appreciate that. Mr. Delgado. Question for Mr. Moore?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, regarding SB 965 and how we can communicate starting next year after it becomes effective, different than we used to be able to communicate. Can you just give us a quick summary of what we can do in the future that we couldn't do in the past? What's new?
Council may have something to add on that.
So for general orders or general WDRs and waivers, you will be able to meet with parties that in an ex parte basis that you were not able to meet beforehand. Now, there are some rules on that, in that whenever there is a meeting, the party that you meet with must make a disclosure that includes what you talked about, includes any papers that they gave you, and the state board will be providing all board members with a template to just give them whenever you have a meeting with them, just so they know what they have to do and you know what they have to do, and they have to do that within 10 days of the meeting. As well, the board can decide that within, I think it's 14 days or so of a board item, you can say no more ex parte meetings, and that kind of prevents all this last minute meetings so that you can actually prepare and you're not overwhelmed. So you're not required to make these meetings, it's just you can if you'd like now.
So if someone walks up in a restaurant and says, what do you think about the pending ag waiver in 5 years? And it's 2016 or whatever. Do we have to say, oh, here's a form. I'll meet with you in the future, and then you have to fill this form out. Or do I carry it around in my pocket, and we meet, and then they fill that form out?
If it's a one-off side conversation like that, I would generally say, I would still say don't discuss things out of contact, you know, out of meetings. If they come to you with an actual request for a meeting, then you could do it, but I would still shy on the not having ex parte conversations without these disclosures. Because yes, if you did have that conversation, then you would need to say, okay, now you have to tell the world about it.
So this topic is actually going to be on the January agenda, ex parte communications. And the reason for that is OCC is developing guidelines now. The state board is going to be putting a template up on the website, up front on their front page, where it's very easy for parties to, so that Mr. Delgado won't have to keep these in his back pocket. The form will be on the websites. They'll be on our websites. And we are going to need to talk about this because, it's going to be your responsibilities to make sure you follow the guidelines, and that means you are going to be talking to Jessica probably more than you have in the past, at least initially. So we are going to agendize this in January. We'll talk about it in more detail.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The one thing I would add is, or just emphasize in what Jessica said, is that the burden is on the party, not you. You know, ultimately, it's their responsibility to report. You don't have to take up a bunch of this meeting to tell about all the people you dealt with. It's the responsibility. This was something that our legislative staff worked hard on to make sure our board members weren't burdened by this additional communication. So, you know, I say thank you, OCC, for continuing to emphasize that. Because that's really critical for us to do our job efficiently.
Okay, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I'm clear, and I always look forward to talking more to Jessica rather than less, but there will still be a timeline qualification. Bruce's example of an ag waiver renewal in 5 years, you can have all the conversations you want right now because it hasn't met that timeline requirement, right?
Right. There's still that pending item issue. If it's not a pending item, then there's no problem having ex parte conversations because they really technically aren't ex parte. So if someone came up to you today and wanted to talk about the ag waiver, you're fine. If someone comes up to you in 2016 and you know you're going to be hearing it in a couple months, that's when you have the issue.
Okay. Question on the climate change. Department of Water Resources is working on public works infrastructural changes, perhaps, in the requirements that cities and jurisdictions will have to comply with?
No. No, they're working on the state water project management and water supply management.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry if I was unclear.
You probably weren't. I just wanted to.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, the state is reckoning with climate change on a lot of levels.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Folks, let's move on.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
If I could just take a minute to provide a regional connection to just a couple of the issues that he talked about. One was the cost of compliance effort that's going on. So we, Region 3 does have a role in that. I sit on that committee from my past life. Also, Lisa McCann, who's sitting behind me, is the technical rep for helping to evaluate cost of compliance for the ag programs. The cost of compliance effort is generally geared towards WDR and NPDES permitting activities, but the State Board wanted the ag program added to it. And of course, the challenge with that is the ag programs are relatively new, and cost of compliance is going to be a difficult one to work with, but Lisa is going to be providing the help on that. On climate change, Region 3 is going to participate in a conference call with Coastal Commission and State Board, I believe it's next week, on the Morro Bay sewer plant that's coming up, that's up for a rehab. And the issue there is the location of the facility along the coast, and the Coastal Commission is reluctant to give them the permit to rebuild there. And of course, we have a number of facilities there along the coast, and probably 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't a problem building them right on the bluffs, but times have changed, as we all know, so that is something I think we will have to look at in some fashion in the future. Mm. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to the next agenda item.